Hello, everyone, and welcome, welcome. Paula V here. You may know me as the host of Why Am I So Happy on BBS Radio, or the host of For the Love of Reiki on Voice America Radio. I welcome everyone to today's show. I am so thrilled to share with you today an amazing man. His name is David Lowe. David has a master's in community counseling, a PhD in religious studies. He's an adjunct professor, or was an adjunct professor at Rutgers, Holy Family, LaSalle, and Rowan Universities for 10 years. Worked as a drug counselor for 7 years, has taught meditation, does dream work. Has lived in both Eastern and Western spiritual communities for 5 years, one of them in India. I love that. I love that. And for a couple of years out of college, even worked on small variety shows as juggler. Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice is the name of his first book. I welcome you, David. Thank you so much.
It's cool to be here. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, you're just so welcome. I'm so honored to have you, and so much sharing that I know we have in store for us today. Let's begin, David, with tell us about your book, this exciting book that you have written.
Well, there was really nothing else like it out there, which is why I wrote it. Nothing that succinctly presents all the universal teachings and practices in a way that's both systematic and entertaining. By succinct, I mean under 200 pages. All the central truth is there. All the central truths are there, with lots of pictures and word balloons to make it more readable. Because it is a textbook. It talks about, it has chapters on dreams, on spiritual teachers, on groups, on different philosophies, different cosmologies. It pretty much covers all the basic. It gives you different levels of understanding questions for common questions like, what is the devil, or will I go to heaven? What is heaven? There are simple, easy answers to those questions and complex, profound answers to those questions. This book gives you both. So it lets you helps you find yourself and kind of tells you where to go from there. Gives you an overview of the whole tableau of spiritual groups and New Age spirituality compared to sort of traditional religion, and gives you a sense of the difference between the two and where each person wants to go once you find yourself in it.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I love it. And why did you write this book, David?
Well, I was getting more and more unfulfilling work as an adjunct professor. Teaching religious studies courses around Philly was great, but it was getting old. And other parts of my life were also challenging. So one day, sitting in the university library, thinking about all this and getting kind of depressed about it, I had this epiphany. You could call it a peak experience, because the concept for my book crystallized in my mind, and with it, sort of a whole new life direction. I wanted to redirect my teaching and writing in a more spiritual direction.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And what would you say is the most unique thing about this book?
Is how systematic it is. It's short, to the point, gives the essence of all important teachings and trends, and it doesn't focus on any one person's experience, because ten different people have 10 different experiences of the same teacher. What it does do is summarize roughly similar experiences that thousands of people have under similar spiritual circumstances. It's a textbook, but written in like a very entertaining, lighthearted way. That's key.
Yes. So it's an easy read and easy to understand.
Yeah, with the pictures and word balloons, it's very, very entertaining to look at, I hope. Otherwise, it wouldn't be, because it is a textbook and it does deal with fairly difficult material philosophically. But it's compellingly written. People have told me that it is compellingly written, and the pictures and word balloons make it readable, which it otherwise would might not be. So I think I've really put something out there, which a lot of people tell me that they like it a lot. So I'm really confident that it can make a difference for some folks when they get their hands on it.
Oh, it sounds fascinating. And really, no one is average. We are all unique. But what would you say to the average seeker, the average person out there reading this book? Who did you write it for? What would you say to them?
I wrote it for a critically minded person who has left his place of worship, if they ever had one, is sick of all the fighting in politics and religion, but who also has trouble relating to what you might call popular or New Age spirituality, gurus and so forth. You'll get a concise overview of all the different paths and faiths, different levels of understanding, in like a very systematic way. So it's for someone who's it's potentially very popular, but I need to overcome the initial impression that it's a textbook and uninteresting. It's not. It's very interesting. It's an informal textbook written in sort of an entertaining way, dealing with a subject that would otherwise be kind of ponderous. So that's what I've done, and I hope people will like it.
Oh, it just sounds like a great read. It really does. It really does. And for you, David, what is the difference between religion and spirituality? I know that a distinction, which a lot of people have on their mind, we have different ideas. Myself, for example, being a Reiki practitioner, a lot of people will ask me, is this religious? No, it is not a religion, but it is very, very spiritual. So what would you say for you, what do you see as the difference between religion and spirituality?
Well, religions are cultural systems. You can measure and observe them. Contemplative spirituality or mysticism is deeper, underneath language and culture. You enter a more profound realm of like direct experience and feeling, which anyone can get to, because everybody has a dimension of that experience in them. Everyone has the capability to tap into something deeper. It's like whenever you're touched by anything powerful, one relatively common experience, which I think is sort of an entryway into it, would be confronted by an extraordinarily powerful visual experience, say you're at the south rim of the Grand Canyon, or under good conditions, looking up at the night sky and the Milky Way. That can tap into a tiny experience of mysticism, of deeper spirituality. Yeah, that's what we're talking about with the difference between spirituality and religion, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, I love that you mentioned, you know, we can be in a particular area or something around us that helps us tap in. For instance, I love Sedona, Arizona, the vortex. I go there and the energy, it really does tap you into, you feel more spiritual and more connected to totality.
Absolutely. I've never been to Sedona, but I've always wondered about it.
That's cool. I love it. Yeah.
Got to go there someday.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Oh, how fun. Is there anything about religion that bothers you, which contributed you to write this?
Well, yeah, I'm astounded, really astounded that so many people identify with literal belief in the destructive way that they do. I mean, if you want to believe that Jesus literally, physically floated up to heaven, or that Muhammad got on a horse and flew from Mecca to Jerusalem and then back all in one night, the belief is fine. What's not okay is to identify with it in a politically selfish way, and therefore to fight wars over it. And that's what's been happening over in the Middle East for decades. You know, how it is that otherwise intelligent, functioning adults believe stuff like that in that way just blows my mind. And they're a great teaching story for young people, but adults, come on.
Yes.
But people fight wars over them. You know, it astounds me. It really does.
Yes. It really does me as well, David. You know, and it's in all the religions we'll see someone go out and do a horrendous act or be cruel or be dishonest, but yet say they're so religious. And I sit back and think, I believe in Jesus, and I think, would Jesus do that? No. It really is amazing. And I don't know what brings people to do that, to kill or do something horrendous in the name of religion. I don't quite understand that myself.
Yeah, I mean, we can quote all kinds of theories of psycho-spiritual development to the effect that, I mean, it's amazing. People they can be very accomplished adults, have good jobs and families and everything, and be very functional in the world. But at the same time, be extraordinarily, I guess, quote unquote, childish in their spiritual beliefs in terms of how rigid they are. And I don't know, it's just really, really remarkable. That is a confounding element of the human condition that we've got to get over.
Rigid, that's a good description. It really is. And I personally see spirituality and the religion that I believe in is I believe it should be loving and compassionate. I love that. And so you're frustrated that people are so conditioned by their cultures, aren't you?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, people are stuck in language and culture. It's difficult not to be. But a lot of people think those differences are set in stone. My ideas, my feelings, my opinions make me who I am, period. I mean, a lot of people in academia, in the social sciences, even the humanities, although they may be very liberal in everything, are pretty hopeless in that regard. They've been shaped by our prevalent postmodern worldview, which basically says that different cultural groups are essentially isolated from each other. There are no underlying deeper realities which connect us all, which I think is complete nonsense.
Yes.
Anyone who gets into deeper mystical spirituality realizes that through direct experience. There are underlying things which connect us all.
We are all connected. Yes, I agree, David. I agree. Tell us about your own journey. What have you been through that caused you to finally research, write this book, and your journey with the places you have studied, like India,
Yeah.
I would love to hear about that. Tell us
Right.
more about your.
I'd really have to attribute it to early suffering and disillusionment. I was hyperactive, asthmatic growing up, more or less a disaffected young person. I mean, at one end of the spectrum, you have your popular athletes, right? This is like high school. At the other end of the spectrum, I was more toward the other end of the spectrum. I was reasonable athletic, but kind of dorky, socially clumsy, couldn't talk to girls, that kind of thing. My big event in high school was like the high jump, and in college I got into skydiving. So I was always trying to leave the earth, kind of. So later, with all my spiritual initiation that I went through, the first initiation I got from this incredible teacher, I was just completely blown away by the depth of the grief which I experienced. Well, basically what I did was I cried for 2 hours straight without knowing why. And in a very, very deep, powerful way. It wasn't the normal kind of crying. My whole body had to convulse to get the tears out. It was ex I no conscious association or understanding as to why it was happening. It just really, really deep weeping from who knows how many lifetimes of pain, Really powerful.
Yes.
That's sort of an overview of early and late David Lowe. Life history, sort of.
Oh, fascinating, David. Fascinating. With that, I'm going to stop us now, David. We are going to pop out for a commercial. But everyone, we will be back in just a couple more minutes with some great chatting with David Lowe. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, David.
All right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Paul Levy here. Today, I am chatting with David Lowe. He is sharing some fascinating information about his recent book, as well as experiences, his journey. Oh, it's just been amazing. I would love to ask you, David. I know you've had some amazing teachers in your studies and your travels. Is there anyone in particular or a story that you would like to share with us today?
Sure. Well, first, let me say that some of these teachers are very particular about the way they get their publicity, so I can't give you any names. But I'll say that I like to say that I have four angels. My primary major teacher from whom I got initiation does show up in dreams now and then to say, with brief symbolic flashes, do this, do that, and so forth. That happens every so often, even now. Ganesha, the Hindu deity, the remover of obstacles, does come to me now and then, and in more or less the same way, and to indicate things which I should and shouldn't do. No, there's never any dialogue. There's only just brief symbolic flashes in dreams. And two other ordinary people who I think are awake, 100% awake, and they have also had a powerful influence on me. One of them is a kirtan singer. Another was a technical writer for IBM, actually, and who had this awakening experience and who does teach small groups of people here and there. So, I would have to qualify those people as my four angels, as it were, with whom I have interior relationships, even if it's only very, very infrequent. So that's one. The other part of your question was what? I'm sorry.
Any stories or special experiences you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. I can talk about a dream I had. This is like 30 years ago, after I got initiation from the big teacher. I was thinking back then of getting involved with a certain woman, right? Mm-hmm. But then I had a 3-second audio dream. No images, just sound. And that 3-second audio dream consisted of two things: a squalling baby and that woman nagging. And that said everything. That dream saved my life, or significantly altered the course which I otherwise would have taken. So that was of major import to me. That's precisely the sort of dream I had as a result, I think, of getting these initiations, which you don't have to do. We don't have to all get initiations from major sadhgurus or anything like that. What you do have to do is tune into your spirituality and take an interest, dialogue with the inner self through trying to interpret your dreams and things like that. Very important. So that's certainly one story. I can give you an example of another dream if you feel like to hear that, but that's a lot on dreams right there.
Yes, and I would love that. And the fact is, you do dream work. Would you tell the listeners that aren't familiar with what dream work is, what that entails?
Well, dream work is based on the idea, which is borne out by everyone's experience since way back when, that they do have a spiritual dimension. They do communicate important things to us. We all have a natural faculty to pick up on stuff which transcends through interior mechanisms, which transcend time and space. Everybody dreams every night, and if we're not allowed to dream, we cease to be able to function after a couple of weeks. That's been known for decades.
Wow.
And yet people don't think it's that important. People are not interested in their dreams. This is astounding. So it's just a matter of paying attention. There is no free lunch. We do have to do our part by being interested enough to interpret them. But that information is always on offer all the time. Wow. They are, in my experience, dream, and in the experience of everyone, really, if they paid attention, dreams are a kind of advanced radar which do alert you to practical circumstances which could be difficult for you if you take action to head them off.
Yes.
So they can help everybody in their practical affairs. And we do have this inherent capacity to grow and unfold. Everybody's growing and unfolding, whether we want to or not. And dreams are always offering information to help us do that more effectively.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, I love that. And they can be messages. Myself, personally, I always call in the archangels to be with me and send me messages through dreams. I think it's just so powerful what messages we can receive with our dreams.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are frustrated in that they can't remember their dreams. Three things that I say in response to that. One, either you're too clear, so you don't need to remember them. Two, you're too dense, so they're not getting through. And three, which is the most likely answer, you're not doing the right things with your life. Get out of your comfort zone and more into your spirituality. Get a diary. Pour your questions and frustrations into that diary. If you don't have any questions, look around the world and try to figure out what's going on and why. That will, I mean, there are other things you can do, like going through, you can go through the sequence of body movements that you had over the course of the evening. Sometimes that will jog your memory. But it's really a matter of interest that you take in your dreams.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Excellent, David. Now, let's talk a bit about, we all have attachments and our opinions, our ideas, but yet we also want to be open. What can we do about our attachments to ideas and opinions? And are there things that you're still struggling with?
Yeah, like you could, I'm struggling with the extinction of species in the environment, really.
Oh.
And I need to do, I'm still doing with that what I will try to describe, which I think everybody goes through a natural process of doing as they grow up as adults. Take an idea or situation in the world that means something to you, right? And just start pulling the lens back. Like, say, for example, the idea of everyone having a good organic diet. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't the health benefits just blow everybody away if they could just do that?
Yes.
But, you know, the greater the number of people that you envision having that in practical terms, the more inherently problematic the whole idea becomes. And more real-world factors prevent that from ever happening. In the same way, more and more real-world factors prevent us from ever being able, it seems, to preserve all these wonderful species of animals that are vanishing.
Yes.
But that's not God's plan. In some profound way, we have to see something optimistic in that process. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop trying to help things and to fix things, but the more we can reconcile ourselves to reality, the less we suffer when we hear about so many terrible things and or things not going our way.
Yes.
You know, pulling the lens back forces you to examine things more philosophically and eliminates attachment to ideals, even though those ideals are useful.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to see all these animals, which, you know, we obviously should allow animals to have their own space for living just as we do, but
yes,
inexorably all these things are happening. You know?
That is my most passionate endeavor. I'm right there with you. And I'm going to invite you, as well as the listeners right now, since we're on this topic, the third Saturday of every month, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. in your time zone, wherever you are around the world, please join us in taking a few minutes to send love, energy, prayer, Reiki, if you're a Reiki practitioner, to the entire planet's animal kingdom. I've been doing this almost 2 years now, and it's my goal is to just send this wave of energy every month, because the animals will feel it. I would love
That's
to have
wonderful. You join, they sure will, yeah.
David. I would love it. Yes, gosh. In one of your chapters, you talk about a huge range of practices that people can do by way of spiritual seeking. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so how do you go about your spirituality? I talk about 25 practices and attitudes in the book. None of them belong to any one religion. The one real important thing to get, which I really want to get folks to understand, the religions don't have different practices. They all have different degrees of emphasis and cultural expressions of the same basic practices. And there's a lot more of those than you think. You can be very eclectic, put together your own combination of methods. I think a lot of people are ready not to feel obligated by the religious structures that they grew up with. There are lots of ways of doing any one religion. And there are practices you can do like breathing or the basic form of self-inquiry or what you might call light-duty vision quests, which have nothing to do with any one culture or religion, which is good news for atheists who might otherwise feel foolish doing something which they think of as religious. It's not.
Yes. So what other kinds of practices would you recommend for someone out there who isn't religious?
I would say just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, endeavor to keep your mind clear as you breathe. And in general, breathe more slowly and deeply. There's a relationship between the breath and the mind, right? If you need to calm down about something, make yourself breathe more slowly and deeply. That'll work, guaranteed. and spend a lot of time alone. I mean, spend regular time alone. And I mean really alone. No book, no iPhone, no music or anything. When you're out there, think about things that are meaningful and think about things that you're disgruntled or unhappy about in your life. Meditate. Do yoga. Life is about discovering ourselves.
Yes.
And that's how you go about doing it if you don't have any interest in religion or spirituality.
Oh, I love it. And for those who want to meditate, but they struggle with that, they have a hard time with that, what advice do you give them to help them with?
I would say the key to that is expanding your definition of meditation. Don't think of it as always involving sitting down. Right? The essence of meditation is a gentle focusing of the mind to prepare for the final breakthrough. What I would recommend is a walking meditation. Walk a little bit more slowly than average. Look more or less at the ground in front of you and correlate the number of steps you can take with your normal breathing. Breathe in over the course of 3 steps, then breathe out over the course of the next 3 steps. Something like that. Do that for a half hour as you walk. And if your mind wanders, just keep coming back to the discipline of those two things, paying attention to your breathing and your stepping. That's it. That's a meditation, just as valid as anyone sitting down doing a mantra, you know?
Yes.
And you can always do the classic movement techniques if you have time for training, yoga, tai chi, qigong. But do them contemplatively. Don't put music on when you do them. Do them to your breathing. Yeah.
Oh, now that's something I have never heard. Don't put music on. Just go with your breathing. I love that.
Well, silence is challenging.
Yeah.
Silence is frightening, but we need to learn to be with ourselves, so we need to challenge ourselves with silence every so often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, I love that. I'm going to do that. How fun, because I automatically always have music or, you know, in the background.
Well, you know, it's a matter of faith, of realizing that there is within you the music of the spheres.
Mm-hmm.
There is the most profound inner sound current, as some esoteric folks call it, the ongoing vibration of the universe in ever overflowing creation. It's like a pulse of God is at the very base of your breathing. It's this universal sort of, you know, ongoing purr of God noise, if you will.
Yes.
And if we can just tune into that, the pulse of the breath. All, you know, we may be from whatever culture, whatever religion, whatever stage of life we're at, everybody breathes. And in between the breaths, as they say, is that mystical space of oneness. So when you're in silence, you really have to have some faith that there is something in there. You can eventually tune into it. Yeah?
I love that. And myself, when I practice Reiki, it's totally about the breath. Breath is what I focus on. And I envision that breath coming from source through me down into mother. And everything is just the breath. And
right. And I'm sure that the music that you do use, Paul, is probably very, very contemplative and soft and very encouraging of introspection. And if it gives... if there is shakti in it, if there is rasa or joy in it, then by all means keep it on. But
yes.
Every so often, challenge yourself with silence,
yes.
Even if that results in a dropping off of the bliss level. Because deeper down, there's something even more profound in there, and that's a matter of faith to get there.
I think we can. Oh, I love it. I love it, David. This is just fantastic discussion. I am enjoying this so much. We are going to have to pop out in a moment. You've given us your website. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Well, yeah. Anyone who wants to contact me about the teachers, david@worldspirituality.com. I do dream work. The title of the book, Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice. David Lowe, no E, David Lowe, MSPhD.com, my website. Yeah, so yeah, those are the basics.
Excellent. I love it. Well, everyone, we're going to pop out. Don't go away. I will be right back with David. Thank you, David.
Cool.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am here today with David Lowe, having some fantastic conversation. David, I would like to begin this last segment with, it's my understanding that you have done vision quests.
Right.
I'm very intrigued with that. You say that people can use them to solve problems. Tell us about that, please.
Okay. So the traditional one, the traditional vision quest in Native American culture is like 4 days long. You fast, you do the sweat lodge ceremony and so forth. You don't have to do that at all. But I would say 12 to 24 hours. Like, and for practical issues too, if you want to figure out, why doesn't my brother talk to me, or should I divorce my wife, or should I shut down the restaurant business that I'm struggling to keep going? So what you want to do is, find a really quiet place in a semi-wilderness environment and stay in that one spot. No iPhone, no iPad, no book, no pen and paper, no physical activity or moving around except, to go 30 or 40 feet away to pee. Other than that, nothing to distract you. It's just you and God. Silent semi-wilderness location, natural sound, no human artifice in sight, ideally. If you can't get out of the city, find an empty room, nothing in it, except maybe for a window, hopefully looking out on some trees or something like that. So the idea is to face yourself. With that length of time, I would say absolute minimum of six, more like 12 hours. With that length of time, all of your usual thoughts and fantasies will play themselves out and start to run down. It's at that point that, things can get scary because the inner voices start to speak up and be heard. We all have traumas and scars, and when we get bored, that is our body trying to distract itself away from listening to ourselves. But if that what you will start doing is making deeper connections about things that you hadn't thought of before. Okay. And nodding off and falling asleep is part of the process. So it's important to ritualize the whole thing a little bit. Give an offering and prayers beforehand to something, a charity or whatever, before you begin. And find a spot, do your vision quest, and then commemorate or celebrate the whole occasion afterwards, after you end it. But, over the course of those 12 hours, over the course of that 24 hours, you fall asleep, you nod off, you get up, you feel, The idea is to challenge yourself. Utter, complete solitude, just you and God. And you will think about stuff that you hadn't thought of before. But you have to put yourself out there for some time and just starve yourself of all other stimuli for that length of time. It will, I guarantee you, you will think of stuff and make connections that you hadn't thought of before. Sometimes people obviously have powerful visions and inner experiences and so forth. But if that doesn't happen, you will think of things and have self-understandings that you would otherwise not have had, guaranteed, in my experience anyway.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Let's touch on the topic of miracles. What about miracles, David? Do you believe in miracles such as portrayed in the Bible, as well as miracles that, are happening all around us? What is your thought on miracles?
I think that such events as portrayed in the Bible are exceedingly rare. Orthodox religion has always relied upon spectacular stories to get people interested. A dead person coming back to life, leprosy vanishing before your eyes. Mm-hmm. That's spectacular. It would make the tabloids.
Yes.
What's not spectacular is the way miracles usually happen. And this happens all the time. Say you visit a renowned spiritual master, a guru or something. You have a real powerful experience. You give him a donation and so forth. That night, the guru shows up in your dreams, does some hands-on healing or something. And then 2 weeks later, your cancer's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing happens around spiritual masters all the time.
Yes.
But it doesn't make the National Enquirer, right? Because that's not spectacular.
Right. Yes.
So for me, the miracles of Christ could have happened the way the Bible says, but probably didn't. Mainstream scholars pretty much agree that, to some extent, the church fathers embellished the gospel accounts for the sake of mass appeal. they were concerned with creating a religion. Miracles do happen, even spectacular ones, every so often, but most miracles they're very unspectacular. That's sort of the thing with miracles.
Yes.
Yeah, they happen all the time.
Everyday things. I personally believe the fact that I am sitting here is a miracle. I was a preemie baby, little over 2 pounds, wasn't supposed to make it through the night. I really feel, you know, I was meant to be here, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's how you look at things, too. But I do, I believe there's, I love that, David. I love that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. In connection with that, you know, the fact that you did make it and that you are here, there is a plan. I think one of the most powerful experiences people can do is to, in the winter, sometime in the winter, when the air is clear and there's no pollen, go out to some place where there's no light pollution, way out in the middle of nowhere, in a clear night, look up in the vault of heaven, see the starry sky, see that Milky Way, and you realize that there is a plan. I do have a destiny. And there is a sense of ultimate authority that I must submit to. I mean, I think a really mature spirituality does involve a sense of submission to some ultimate authority, no matter how vague that may be. We do need to look up and acknowledge in gratitude and joy.
Yes.
But also, we are God, but at the same time that we are God, we are these tiny, tiny little things that are just the pawns of God. You know, we are both those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. So there is a sense of authority, which I think folks may have trouble tuning into, but it can be very constructive if you really contemplate. There is a big boss out there, and it's worth paying attention to it, kind of.
Yes. Now, yeah. David, yes, and you know, I'm very big on gratitude and, you know, being grateful and positive attitude, what that creates, and I believe happiness is a choice. So to our listeners out there, what would you say to them with their spirituality or something they can do every day to help them focus more on the positive and have that happiness, you know, and have that happiness inside them compared to seeing what they don't like and what makes them unhappy? What advice do you have for our listeners on bringing more happiness into their lives?
Yeah, a couple of affirmations come to mind. Aside from just being centered and breathing and having clarity of mind about everything, I'm thinking of two phrases which I know I've used to my tremendous benefit. One is, the power of God is in me. The power of God surrounds me. So in any situation where you feel like you're being put upon or stressed, just remember that. The power of God is in me. The power of God surrounds me.
Love it.
Another one, even better, and I think is more general, is I can, I will, I am able.
Oh, I love that.
I can, I will, I am able. And then you can substitute something. Yeah, affirmations are a big topic, and we could talk about them in some detail. But that would be, those two phrases are probably the most general and immediately applicable to our sense of gratitude and happiness. But, you know, I can, I will, I am able reminds you that, you know, that whatever you are destined to do, you'll be able to do it.
Yes.
And it tunes you into the faith and gratitude involved in ongoing, you know, activity in the world, which isn't always appealing, but I can, I will, I am able to cope with my reality, to be happy, to have an appropriate attitude, and to be grateful about stuff.
Yes. Oh, that is beautiful, David. That is really beautiful. I know that your big thing is that religions are all the same underneath. Can you give me an example of an underlying similarity between the different religions?
Sure. Probably for example, the monotheistic, polytheistic difference. Some people think that they're very different. Like Hinduism, for example, has tons of deities in it. That's a polytheistic faith primarily. There are 15 or 20 major deities, hundreds of minor ones. but they all come out of the same animal. They are, all those deities are expression of, all those deities are expressions of that which is both Hindu and Christian, the one primordial God. Any educated Hindu knows that, right? So there is a monotheistic aspect to Hinduism. Now take Catholicism, which is kind of opposite, right? It's on the surface, it's very monotheistic. But look closer. What are people often actually worshiping? What are they, to whom are they directing their private devotion? Very often it's not God. It's often not even Jesus. It's the Madonna, you know, the Mother Mary. It's a tremendous cult of the Madonna, especially in Latin America. Or one of the patron saints. Or the living Pope, the guy who's not canonized yet. So those are like a total of 6 or 7 different entities in Catholicism to which you can direct your prayers and devotions. And although there is a technical difference in the theology between praying to God and Jesus and venerating, I think is a term they use, venerating those other categories. You know, I mean, it's still the same dynamic underneath. Prayer is prayer. Devotion is devotion.
Yes.
So Catholicism has a polytheistic aspect. So, you know, we need sights and sounds and smells to relate to God, right? And that's why Catholicism, I think, will probably always be the biggest branch of Christianity by a mile. And they also conserves the idea of a living spiritual master. So there is monotheistic, polytheistic difference. It's not that big a difference underneath, because all religions have polytheistic aspects to them, if you look closely enough at them.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I love it. So what would you say about enlightenment? You know, we talk a lot about enlightenment. Do you feel that you are enlightened?
No, I'm not awake. Mm-hmm. I do know some guys who have had profoundly transformative experiences, who were seekers before and who have had profoundly transformative experiences, which blew away all of their other spiritual experiences, and which they call complete and final. So they continue to grow and change as normal human beings, but spiritually they're done. There's a real aspect of the journey in which it is, their spirituality has completely and totally matured, even though they keep changing as normal human beings in the process of growth and development. So I do think that in some of the circles I travel in, it's most often referred to as being awake, having woken up.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think enlightenment exists as a potential for everybody. I'm not sure that I have the level of interest required to get there myself, but I'm trying.
Now, what are your thoughts on karma, David?
Well, karma, it's, you know, just the law of cause and effect applied to the moral realm. It's absolutely, I mean, there is a mechanics how everything happens. Things happen for a reason. The universe does have a mechanics to it, and we have to believe that just as there are physical laws, the laws of chemistry and physics, which regulate and govern matter on the earthly plane, there are other more subtle laws, but roughly similar, which govern actions or reactions with our thoughts, our feelings, you know, in between lifetimes and so forth. I mean, people die with unresolved issues. I think karma is very real, and if we're going to explain or understand anything, we must utilize the concept of karma along with reincarnation. It's the only way to really make sense of everything across time. So it's a very valuable and commonsensical idea, which is very meaningful and very profound, because, you know, we all have our karma.
Yes.
But we don't want to lean on our karma as an excuse to why we did this versus that. Well, yeah, karma is a very important idea, for sure.
With just a couple moments left in the show, David, what last words would you like to share with the listeners today?
Well, I am I do dream work over the phone. David@worldspirituality.com if you want to do a dream, or if you want to hear about my teachers. David Lowe, MS, PhD, this was my website, and I would urge anyone, get into your spirituality in whatever mode that, whatever way that, whatever mode that means for you, to really sort of dive into your own angle on profound questions and to realize that, yeah, there is something out there, and that more than ever we need to find it, and we need to undergo self-transformation in order to reach that 100th monkey. Because if we can reach that 100th monkey, I think that if a critical number of people can get far enough in their spirituality, then we can transform the earth in a way that we otherwise wouldn't consider possible.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And the 100th monkey, I've never heard that term. How fun is that?
Yeah, there was a group of primatologists about 40 or 50 years ago did research on a group of, they were macaques or something in Japan, and they noticed that when a critical number of these monkeys learned a new cultural trait with regard to feeding, everybody else, all the other monkeys on all the different islands, automatically learned it, even though there was no communication between the monkeys who knew it and the monkeys that didn't.
Wow.
So it's like a phase transition effect.
Yes.
Yeah, we can all get it. Like, whoosh, if there are just enough of us reaching enlightenment, then wham, everybody else can get it.
Yes, yes.
So we're all the harbingers of heavy-duty spirituality.
So every one of us that makes that enlightenment our goal in the spirituality and connecting, the more we come together, the 100th monkey is out there waiting. We can really make a difference and change the earth, can't we?
Yeah, I mean, if enough people get far enough, there's a certain critical level or critical mass which is reached, and then whoosh, everybody else gets it, or everybody else more or less automatically becomes happy enough and understanding enough to make all the difference. Because people are suffering. Spirituality is taking a different form. We don't have to do all these great austerities and prayers and chantings that people in the past did. People are doing a lot of spiritual practice just by existing and enduring the conditions that they're under. So they're ready to get it in a way that you and I were not when we grew up.
I love it. Oh, David, I have enjoyed this show so much. I just can't thank you enough.
Cool. I really appreciate being on, Paula.
Oh, it's just my honor to have you on. A big thank you. And to our listeners out there, love, hugs, blessings. Thank you for being with us. And a happy day to everyone.
Thank you all, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.